This is a production of Cornell University.
Wonderful. All right. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. The time is 4:48. Could we get started with our roll call, please?
All right. Lila Abed El Majid.
Present.
Dylan Onadkat. Morgan Baker.
Present.
Genevieve Bansaw.
Present.
Katrina Bentley. Kayla Butler.
Present.
Carlo Castillo.
Present.
Uchenna Chukwu Karig.
Present.
Lucy Contreras.
Present.
Annette Gleiberman.
Present.
Sonu Kapoor.
Present.
Amari Lampert.
Present.
Andrea Mira Montez Sereno. Evan Moy. Jocelyn Nori Ega. Estefania Perez.
Present.
Tomas Ray Rubening.
Here.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Here.
Mardia Chardot. Lucas Smith.
Present.
Claire Templeman.
Present.
Valeria Valencia.
Present.
Noah Watson.
Here.
Salem Wodai. Valentina Shu.
Present.
Wuhan Wuan. Raquel Zohair.
Present.
Lucas Zumpano.
Present.
Samuel Zevrev.
Present.
And Catherine Wong.
Present. Thank you. What is the total number of members present?
22.
Wonderful. Thank you. We have 22 members present. The meeting is now off of order. First of all, thank you again for being here. Welcome to the second week of the assembly. Let's go ahead with the announcements. Noah, if you want to remind everyone of what our meeting agenda looks like today.
Okay, yes. So today at 5 o'clock, we have President Pollack and also VP of Student and Campus Life Lombardi coming in to make a short, they give us a short update and then they open up for questions from SA members and also the community. So that is the first thing on our agenda. And after that, it's just we go into open microphone, I'm sorry. And then we go into the approval of the minutes, and then we will talk about our new business of the day, which is Uche's resolution. So for now, for the sake of like respecting everybody's time, I am going to move into open microphone as we have a few more minutes. So if any members of the community would wish to speak right now, please raise your hand and we will unmute you. And it seems like we don't really have many community members here, so I'm going to close open microphone. So then Kat, should I move on to approval of the minutes while we're waiting as well?
Sure, why not?
Okay, very cool. So if you guys look at the agenda I sent you, there is a link to the September 3rd, 2020 minutes. If you guys have looked those over, ensured that there are no discrepancies with what happened, then I would ask for a motion to vote to approve these minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Thank you. Thank you, second. Morgan. And then we are just gonna all vote in the participants window. So if you are an SA voting member, as in like you're not an ex officio member, please click the check, the yes button, if you approve these, the no, and then if you're abstaining, please message either me or Kat. Two more, we've got two more. One no. Is there any dissent, Andrea?
Should I explain why I voted no?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
I honestly believe that it would make people more hesitant to vote because they would have to rethink about their priorities. And I feel like it is a reality that a lot of, especially freshmen, don't really understand or like don't really wanna vote. I mean, like a lot of freshmen are really occupied with like their studies. So I honestly think that like prioritizing a schedule would make them feel like they have to do a lot more research, and it would probably do actually the opposite of incentivize them to vote.
Andrew, I think
so. Yeah, Kat.
I think that's really thoughtful. So are you going to ask that we like postpone the vote so that people have more time to look over it? Like you said, people are kind of busy right now. And that's why you voted no. If that's the case, I think because we are in the middle of voting, we can't postpone this vote specifically for the minutes, but we can postpone the next set of minutes, if that is what you would wish.
Yeah.
Okay.
So with that, the minutes have been approved by a vote of 19 to 1, I'm sorry. So I should say we have 19 yeses, 1 no, and 2 abstentions. Okay, is that recorded? Perfect. And then with that, we can also go on to the approval of the October 8th, 2020 minutes. And you guys definitely take your time to review those if you'd like.
So we have 3 minutes until President Pollack and VP Lombardi get here. Should we postpone the approval of the second batch of minutes until after their presentation, just so we can kind of go over what we're going to do when President Pollack does get here? Oh, she's waiting, actually.
Of course.
Let in.
Okay.
Just a quick heads up, she's probably going to give like a 10 to 15 minute presentation, and then we're going to start taking questions from the community, from the student assembly members. I will be prioritizing student assembly members, and then if community members, if you guys have a question you would like to ask as well, please put your hand up, and I will call on you after all SA members have gone. Okay, thank you. Wonderful. Hi, President Pollack. How are you? Oh, I think you're muted. President Pollack, I don't think we can hear you. It might be an audio issue. Can't hear anything still.
Hi, Kat. How are you?
Oh, hi, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Hi, everyone. Good to see you.
It's great to see you. I think President Pollack is having a little trouble connecting with her audio, so we're just going to wait for a little bit to
see. No problem. I'm here.
Awesome.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, wonderful.
So I have a really good microphone, but it doesn't seem to be working. So I'll have to use the kind of junky one on my webcam, but it's better than nothing.
No worries, you're coming through perfectly.
Great.
Cool. VP Lombardi, President Pollack, thank you so much for being here. We're ready to hear your semesterly report, so thank you.
Well, thank you, and apologies again for the little confusion there. It is really good to see all of you. You know, I have, like probably all of you, this love-hate affair with Zoom on the one hand. I can't imagine how we would have survived the last 7 months without it. On the other hand, boy, I wish we were in the straight together. But it is what it is, and so we will go forward. I have a number of updates for you this afternoon, and then I'll leave time for questions as always. But the most important thing I want to say is just an enormous, enormous heartfelt thank you to all of you, to all Cornell students for everything you've done this semester. I'll tell you, back last summerish when we announced that we were going to reopen, people kept saying to us, oh, no matter what you put in place, it's never going to succeed because there's no way that your students will step up and behave appropriately. All summer long, we had skepticism about student behavior, what it would be like as the community returned to the campus and to the Ithaca area. And VP Lombardi and I just kept saying, no, we know our students. We know our students. They can pull this off. And as we've seen, as I have said to everybody who's asked, all those people who said you can't trust college students to be responsible, to act in the best interest of their community, they just don't know Cornell students. We see peer universities around the country struggling with campus outbreaks, students that never reopened. And I like to think that our students have been busy showing the world that even though we don't have a hockey team or a football team, we can still beat Harvard. We've been featured in a number of news outlets, the Washington Post, Good Morning America. Last week we called it Stay Homecoming. It was our version of homecoming. We hosted Dr. Fauci, Anthony Fauci, Weill Cornell Medicine Class of 55, and he pointed to Cornell as, quote, a great example of what can be accomplished. I know it has been anything but easy. I know that all of you are struggling, as we all are, with personal and emotional stresses. And in light of that, your commitment and your achievement is all the more impressive. And I just can't thank you enough for your part that you've played in our so far successful reopening. Now, that said, I have to say so far, I have to urge everyone to continue to practice vigilance. We're doing incredibly well, but the success is fragile. We all run the risk of fatigue. It's hard to keep doing this. We run the risk of complacency. The weather is changing. I think actually the reason I was having audio problems was I had been sitting outside and I think I must not have plugged something back together. As the weather changes, we're gonna have to be in more and that of course increases the rate of transmission. And in some areas, we're not seeing the kind of compliance we need. And I want to mention in particular the daily check. I know it's a pain. It's a pain to pick up your phone and type that in, you know, yes, the same thing every day. But it's really important. It's really important because it helps us gather the information we need to know what the public health status is on campus and make the right decision. So please keep doing that. Please keep reminding your friends to do it. Our cases are very low. Cases in Tompkins County are generally low, but we are seeing increases locally and especially in the surrounding counties. And we're gonna, I fear, see more as the weather turns. So again, it's about 4 weeks or so till Thanksgiving. Mask wearing, hand washing, social distancing, very small groups, all those things that we've talked about, we all need to keep doing. And one of the potential risks that I really wanna point out is travel associated with Thanksgiving. I guess it's six weeks away to Thanksgiving. We are urging everyone in the community, faculty, staff, and students, to avoid traveling away and then returning home to Ithaca. If you're going home for the holidays, you need to stay there till the beginning of the spring semester and finish your semester online. If you're planning to stay in Ithaca through the end of the year, end of the semester, and you live in residential housing, you are required to stay here over Thanksgiving. And if you're living off campus and you want to stay till the end of the semester, we're just urging you, please do not travel. Traveling away from Ithaca and returning puts us at risk. I will tell you, several of the cases we've actually seen have been from people who left the Ithaca area and came back. It puts you at risk, and it puts at risk everybody that you can come in contact with. And if your family or anyone else is, they blame you for not traveling, blame me. Give them my email address. My email address is president@cornell.edu, and I will tell them that you're doing the right thing and we're proud of you. You know, for the record, I haven't seen my own kids. They're adults. I haven't seen them since January. I'm deeply sad that I'm not gonna see them over Thanksgiving. My daughter's 8 months pregnant. I would love nothing more than to go see her. But we've all sacrificed so much already and we just need to keep it going a while longer. I'm really, really convinced that by next year, things will be very different. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say about the pandemic. Last week we had a Board of Trustees meeting, and one of the things that I said to the board was that what's been impressive about Cornell is not just that we've managed to have this so far successful semester, but we've kept going with all the things that make us Cornell, and your faculty in particular have been really incredibly productive. I'm not going to go through the list of all the prizes and awards. Let me just list a few. In the last year, your faculty have won the American Philosophical Association Book Prize. If you haven't read Kate Mann's book, Down Girl, it's a great book. Won the Jonathan Skype Prize, which is sort of the equivalent of the Nobel Prize in Political Science. Dean Ray J won the Carl Sagan Medal of the Division of Planetary Sciences in the American Astronomical Society. There's a Humboldt Research Award, 9 NIH NSF Early Career Awards, an NIH Director Award. We had a faculty-produced film nominated for an Emmy. Go on and on and on. I'm telling you this just to say that in addition to all the incredibly hard work that your instructors are putting in to teaching in this challenging time, they're also continuing to do amazing scholarly work. And it really is a privilege for me to know them. And I hope you realize what a privilege it is to work with them. Also, our fundraising efforts are continuing. Despite the pandemic, donors to Cornell remain very generous. And I want to tell you guys in particular about one program called the Cornell Promise. This is a campaign we decided to stand up to raise funds to help our students who have increased financial aid needs. You know, we are committed to providing through a package of grants and loan the funds that people need to complete their education at Cornell. And we estimate that about 3,000 undergraduates are going to have a changed financial situation as a result of the pandemic. And that may lead to as much as $90 million in additional financial need aids just for this year. But we remain committed to meeting that, and we've gone out to our donors. And to date, we've raised just shy of $27 million from over 1,500 supporters. So I'm really just excited and just grateful that people recognize how important this is. And then in additional raising money for financial aid, I hope everybody knows that we are now in the process of distributing $8.5 million to eligible students with financial needs arising from the pandemic. We've got $1 million of new emergency relief fund and then $7.5 million in grants to offset the loss of anticipated summer income. And that of course follows on to about $5 million in emergency grants that we gave out last spring to 4,000 students through the CARES Act Higher Ed Emergency Relief Fund. I know you all know about that. We got $12.8 million of CARES Act funding. We were required to spend half of that, $6.4 million, on direct relief for students. We were allowed to use the other 6.4 for related institutional expenses, but we chose to direct all of it to student aid. While I'm talking about financial aid, I do know and I regret that the distribution process this fall did not go as smoothly as it usually goes, nor as smoothly as we would like it to go. Not everyone got their aid before the semester began. Some people had some really significant delays, and we know that caused hardship, and I apologize for that. I want to quote from John Burdick, our Vice Provost for Enrollment, who cares really deeply about students. And he said that the pandemic has basically been a perfect storm for financial aid, because you need two things to calculate aid. You need to know about ability to pay and cost. And both because there were really significant changes in people's financial situations and uncertainty around the fall semester, we just didn't have that information until very late in the process, and it changed and it changed again. I personally, and all of us, sincerely regret the challenges it caused. We are taking a number of steps to improve things for next semester. Most importantly, we're hiring and training more financial aid staff. We're automating the evaluation process for most continuing students, so you can more reliably receive accurate awards without having to submit a new CSS profile. We're enhancing our IT systems so student workers will be able to get accurate information in advance about how much they'll be able to earn from their campus jobs. And we're streamlining the appeals process, and along with it, the process for emergency grants. I think you all know that we've been working with the UA for several years now to revamp our campus code of conduct. This is something students have asked me about since the day I came in the door. There's now a new draft of the code. It was drafted at the UA's request by our university council. It's out for comment in the university community. You can submit comments by either the UA website or the Faculty Senate website. The code applies to you, the students. It's really important that you, the students, have a voice in this. So I want to thank you for your efforts and ask you to keep up those efforts to encourage your students to review and comment on the draft. Our Board of Trustees has been very patient. They asked me to do this several years ago. They've been waiting for it. They expect a version that they can ratify no later than the end of November. So please go in and make your comments. Turning towards our work on a more diverse and equitable Cornell, that continues. We're building on some of the initiatives that I announced in a community email that I sent out earlier this month. Again, there's a lot of things going on. I urge you mainly to go look at diversity.cornell.edu, and you can see a complete description of everything in progress. I just want to give you a couple of quick updates. First, we are very concerned with an inclusive, community-centered public safety force. And so we have reformed our Public Safety Advisory Committee. We've elevated its reporting and now reports directly to the Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, that's Joanne DiStefano. Its first meeting will be later this month, just I think in a week or 2 weeks. And the group now has 12 members, including graduate students, undergraduate students, faculty, and staff. Second, I think you all know that under the leadership of Charlie Van Loan, the Dean of Faculty, and Nima Kudva, the Associate Dean for Faculty, the Faculty Senate is developing frameworks for the creation of a new center, a center that will promote research and teaching on systemic racism, colonialism, bias, and inequity, what causes it and how we can prevent it and how we can stop it. They're looking at a framework for a required educational program on faculty on these topics, and they're looking into a 4-credit educational requirement for all Cornell students that covers these same areas. The Senate has, I understand, met with students from Do Better Cornell so that they can be better informed about their aspirations for these programs. And now that the semester is underway, the faculty work is underway. On the staff front, I won't tell you the details, but just mention that it's also important that staff are trained in and sensitive to these issues. And Vice President Mary Opperman and Vice Provost Avery August have recently announced a new required staff training program, Advancing Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Cornell. It's going to have a half dozen online modules and then voluntary community chats. And faculty from our American Indian and Indigenous Studies program are now delving into the history of the land that was granted to Cornell when it was established. And they're paying particular attention to the role of the expropriation of Indigenous lands in the creation of land-grant universities like Cornell. The provost and I had a very productive meeting with these faculty a little bit ago, and we're going to meet with them again as they develop suggestions about how we acknowledge this history. I know it's been a long time since I've seen you guys, so I only have two or three more things, and then I'll open up. But I do know that this group is always very, very, and appropriately concerned with environmental sustainability. And you know, our goal of reaching carbon neutrality is more urgent than ever. I hope everybody knows that back in May, the Board of Trustees voted to institute an immediate moratorium on new private investments that are focused on fossil fuels, and at the same time to grow our investments in alternative energy technologies. Now, when they made that decision in May, about 4.2% of our existing investments were fossil fuel focused, and that number will go down to zero as these investments mature. So you can't just get rid of them right away, you're locked into them. But as they mature, you get rid of them over a period of 2-3 years, something like that. And then that those funds will be redeployed to other areas. We are, of course, continuing to invest in renewable sources of energy like solar, but we are also very importantly continuing to pursue earth source heat. This has been a key part of the plan since 2009. I think most people know it's an ambitious proposal to heat most of our buildings here in Ithaca using a deep geothermal system. So you pump water way down into the ground, you pick up the heat, you pump it back out, and you use that to heat buildings. And I am delighted to share that just 2 months ago, I guess it's 3 months now, in July, we secured a $7.2 million grant from the Department of Energy that's going to let us drill a 2-mile deep borehole to help verify the feasibility of this project. And I have to brag a little because in June, the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education, ASHI, this is the main organization that looks at what colleges and universities are doing in this space. And they recognized our work by awarding us the highest sustainability rating, STARS Platinum. We were the first Ivy League university to get this and only the 6th university in the world. So we, you know, there's a lot more to do, but we are working on it. I think you all have heard, I hope, the good news about the naming of two of our buildings, two of our new North Campus residential buildings. Last month, of course, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, class of 1954, passed away. She often talked about her formative experiences at Cornell as an undergraduate. It was here she learned to write, it was here she learned to cherish the Constitution, and it was here she met her husband, the late Martin Ginsburg, class of 53. After she passed away, we received a huge number of requests from students and faculty and alumni and staff to create a physical reminder to her. And these discussions came together with discussions that were going on about how best to honor the memory of her fellow alumna, the late Toni Morrison, MA 55, who passed away not this August, but August of 2019. Toni Morrison, of course, is a critically acclaimed novelist, essayist, and professor. She won both the Pulitzer Prize and the Nobel Prize in Literature, and she is being recognized this year through a series of events, including there was recently a 7-hour reading of her first novel, The Bluest Eye, which I and many other people participated in. We wanted for both of these alumnae, both of these amazing women, however, to create a memorial that would be seen by all of our students, not just those in a particular field or college, one that would remind them of that their path from Cornell can take them anywhere. And so I was just delighted to be able to announce in my State of the University address that we're going to be honoring both Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Toni Morrison by naming for each of them one of our new North Campus residential expansion halls. And then finally, I can't come to this group without saying a word about mental health. That's been a priority for many years. It was a priority before the pandemic. And of course, it's an area of increased concern now because we're all dealing with so many stresses. The report of the Comprehensive Mental Health Review is going to be released in just a couple of weeks, and then there'll be an implementation process to follow. That process, of course, will include student advisory committees. We're going to continue to seek your feedback constantly on how best to support student mental health at Cornell. In the meantime, we have a range of programs in place, both in Ithaca and away. We've expanded our telehealth offerings. Now, it's been a little challenging because licensing restrictions, federal licensing restrictions that we don't control, have prevented us from reaching students who are currently out of state with clinical and diagnostic services. So to make sure that they get the services they need, we've partnered with an agency called WPO that connects out-of-state or international students to local counseling services free of charge. VP Lombardi's group, Student Campus and Life, Student and Campus Life has been exceptionally creative and resourceful in providing a range of virtual programs to help compact the social isolation I know we're all feeling, including everything from virtual open houses in groups and departments to online events for Cornell escape rooms. Ryan, I haven't talked with you yet, though. If you have a board gaming group who play Dominion, I want to play online Dominion with students. I'm serious. I don't know if that's something.
We'll get you on the list.
And I just want to encourage everybody, you know, continue to check in on your friends, lean on your friends, be there for your friends. We need this more than ever. So I'm going to stop here. I haven't left us quite half the time, but just a few minutes short of half the time. There's a lot more I could talk to you about, but I think it's better that I just open up for questions. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that detailed and thoughtful report, President Pollack. I really appreciate how you covered Cornell's faculty updates, financial aid, and our diversity and sustainability initiatives. I really appreciate both you and VP Lombardi taking out the time to answer our questions. So I'm going to ask if any SA members have questions they would like to ask, so please put your hand up in the participants chat. I will be prioritizing SA members on the speakers list first, and then we'll move to community members. In the meantime, as we're waiting for the speakers list to build, I have a question of my own for you, President Pollack. Thank you. I was very encouraged to hear that the Public Safety Advisory Committee, the PSAC, will now be chaired by Vice President DeStefano and is looking into increasing its community involvement and will be meeting soon. However, beyond staffing the PSAC with community members, how is Cornell administration planning on providing students and community members with greater and like more direct oversight over policing on campus and the CUPD? Specifically, will students in the community be allowed access to information, for instance, of where the CUPD gets its funding and how much funding the department receives?
Yeah, well, I mean the PSAC is precisely the way in which the community, including students, will have oversight. That's its role. The funding comes out of our budget, and I think that's public information. I'll have to look into that.
Thank you very much. I know that Vice President Watson has a question next, so I'll call on him, and then I'll move to the speakers list.
He's actually on my screen, too. I can see him. I'm like,
Hi, President Pollack and VP Lombardi. Thank you for taking the time to come to our meeting today. And out of respect for everybody's time, I'd just like to get ahead with my question. And I have a short follow-up as well. What are you guys doing to ensure that students who are forced to take a leave of absence and cancel their housing contracts for this semester will be able to secure on-campus housing for the spring semester?
I'll be happy to answer that. No, we have heard from a little over 900 students who have indicated a desire to return in the spring who weren't here in the fall. We have 2,000 spaces right now, so we have plenty of space for any student that wants to come back in the spring. No concerns at this point.
That's promising. Thank you. And then just following up on that, President Pollack, last semester, the Assembly passed a resolution that called on the Department of Student and Campus Life to change their housing policies so that first-year transfer students are guaranteed centralized on-campus housing. Since your office has not yet acknowledged our request, I'd like to take this opportunity to ask why the university intends on starting next year guaranteeing housing for all rising sophomores, but not first year transfer students.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to turn that over to VP Lombardi as well.
I apologize. I actually thought we had acknowledged that resolution, but I apologize if that's not the case. So I'll have to go back and figure out what's happened there. You and I have spoken about this. It is certainly our intent and our hope to be able to make that guarantee to transfer students, but we're not able to commit to that in this moment because we want to make sure that we fully understand and make sure the buildings are all delivered. They open on time. They were shut down. The construction process was shut down for a period of time because of COVID. And so we do want to make sure that our enrollment matches our capacity and that we can make a genuine guarantee. One of the things that's important to me, and I think we spoke about this, Cornell had for a number of years a guarantee that actually wasn't genuine. And although I'd like to say yes immediately, I'm not going to say yes until I actually know we can do it. And because I don't want to be misleading.
Thank you.
Thank you, VP Lombardi. Next, we have Representative Hsu. Valentina.
Hi, President Pollack and VP Lombardi. It's nice to see you guys. My question is actually, first, I'm just going to thank you. I think from the international students over the summer, they really appreciated Cornell's effort joining MIT and Harvard in a lawsuit against ICE so that students can take full online classes this semester. So, but you know, the current administration now have like new moves with the H-1B visa program concerning about the students like post-graduation work opportunities. I was just wondering, can I get some updates, maybe what the university is thinking about this? Is this something on the radar that we are going to take a more proactive like approach?
Yeah, we have been specifically on the OPT issue, we have been very proactive. In particular, we've been working with our peers in the AAU, the American Association of Universities, to express our displeasure, to explain why we think this is a bad thing, not only for our students, but frankly, for the nation. It's often way more effective to do that sort of thing with a consortia of universities like the AAU than to do it on our own. And I can assure you that we have been proactive on that score. Now, what I thought you were going to ask me about were the new visa rules, which have been proposed by the Department of Homeland Security. They more affect graduate students and undergraduate students, but they are also extremely problematic. They do things like require international students to finish their studies in 4 years, but often to take a PhD, it's 5 or 7 years. If you're an international student from a country where more than 10% of the students have overstayed their visa, then no matter what you do, you have to leave in 2 years. There's a number of these issues that are problematic. Again, our Federal Relations Office is in very close communication with the staffers of congressional offices. And I should tell you, although it does impact more graduate students, many of you will be international graduate students at some point, we hope. If you go, it's the comment period now. If you go to www.regulations.gov, I'm gonna put the docket number in the chat. You can go in and make comments on it and talk about why it is such a bad thing. So the general answer to your question is, more than anything, I wish there weren't so. I think our international students are such a critical part of Cornell, and I think international students in this country are so important. It just seems like there's one attack after another, and we are doing everything we can with our representatives in Congress and with our peer institutions to fight back against this. And I'm sorry that it's true. I really, really wish it weren't the case.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, President Pollack, and thank you, Valentina. Next we have Representative Reining. Tomas, the floor is yours.
Hi, my question for President Pollack. So I appreciate you acknowledging the delays in financial aid. I just wanna add that there are still students who have not received financial aid, including myself. And many of these students are low income or independent students who rely on financial aid.
I did not know that. I will take that up, not tonight.
Yeah. I know, outside of myself, I know multiple people who still have not received financial aid.
Okay.
Kind of jumping off of that, you mentioned the emergency funds for students. Will they be distributed directly to students similar to last semester where CARES Act funding was automatically distributed, or will students have to apply to it similar to the Access Fund?
I don't know the answer. Ryan, do you know the answer to that?
Yeah, I do, Tomas. There are two different buckets of it. So the one that the president referenced, the $1 million emergency fund, that is an application-based fund. The other portion of it, which, what was that, $7.5 million, I think, that will be automatically distributed to students, similar to in the spring.
And when can students expect that to be distributed? Do you have an idea?
I don't. I'd be happy to ask the financial aid office. I can kick you a note, Tomas.
Thank you.
And again, we do apologize. I mean, it's an explanation, not an excuse. The explanation was we got caught up in the pandemic too, but I know that doesn't help students like you, and I do apologize for that.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for your question and for President Pollack and VP Lombardi taking direct action. Next we have Representative Smith, Lucas.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you both for talking with us a little tonight. Curious on some updates from the Dean of Students office. So certainly we have perhaps had a transition with Dean of Students Endicker leaving, and interim Dean Love I've been doing an awesome job, but just curious where we are in that search process, and then tagging on to that with the kind of big role that the CCCT has played this semester. Has that been going successfully, and are you happy with how that's been going, I guess?
They're all for you today.
I'd be happy to answer them. So it was difficult for me to see Vijay leave, of course. Worked very closely with him these last number of years. I think he did a lot of good things for Cornell. But similarly, Marla is an incredibly strong colleague and staff member, so was delighted to be able to have her step into this role. We have not done anything with the search, frankly. Being in the middle of the pandemic, we're also in a hiring freeze, but also we have an exceptional interim dean right now. And so we're going to just sit and have Marla lead the Dean of Students office for a while, and we'll revisit plans for the future as we have a little more time under our belt. So, but I'll certainly keep this body and the students updated. That's a position that I know is very important to students, so we'll make sure that that you're involved as we move forward. The C3T, we have these acronyms, and we even shortened it from the triple C T. C3T team is working well. It's not just Dean of Students office. They've recruited staff from all around campus, student services advisors in the colleges, et cetera. It's going well, in large part because students have been complying so well with the behavioral compact. Doesn't mean all students have, but in general, we just haven't seen some of the really serious problems that some of our peer institutions and other schools around the country have. So that team's doing good work. It is a lot of work, but they're doing a good job with it. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, VP Lombardi. Just a quick question. I know there are restrictions on time. I think we have about 2 minutes left. Okay, great. I'm gonna allow two more questions, one from Representative Chukwuebukir. So Uche, go ahead.
Thanks, Kat. So yes, my question is kind of circling back around the community concerns around CUPD and policing on campus. I know one of the things that different organizations have been, or student demands that have been coming up, is looking into alternative options rather than having policing on campus. Like, for example, I know students have come to me about, you know, the worry that, you know, if a student is having like a mental health breakdown, the fact that CUPD is called to like respond to that is something that's been very troubling for a lot of students, as well as the fact that, you know, CUPD is armed when they are responding to a lot of these types of situations. I know that, you know, that's been a concern for a lot of students. And I was really kind of wondering what, if there's going to be anything that's, if that's going to be looked into.
Yes, we absolutely are looking into the creation of an alternative, I don't even want to call it, but an alternative unit that would respond to non-criminal, non-violent kinds of situations. To be honest, it's been a little bit slow simply because we have just been overwhelmed. We just literally didn't have the resources to pull it together this semester. We've been so tied up with the pandemic, but that is absolutely on our radar screen.
Wonderful. Thank you for your answers. And we have one last question from a community member, actually, as I do want to allow the community voice in here. We have Mariah Adegger.
Yes, hi. I'm an outgoing SA member, but I wanted to ask about, so with Greek life, I know that there's been a lot of conversations. There was recently a Sun article about the passing of Antonio and how that lawsuit is kind of shaping up. And I guess I wanted to ask if there's a threshold as far as like when Greek life would be completely abolished due to like the deaths that are like occurring because of it. I know that we've kind of had this conversation with Vijay in the past about, you know, donors and kind of balancing that, but it has been something that's been kind of on my mind when thinking about the number of people that we've lost to Greek life.
Yeah, well, as you know, because you've heard this from other people, not just me, we can't talk about an active law case. I do have to take a little bit of exception about the donors and other things, because I have to tell you, VP Lombardi and I have pushed back really hard over the past few years against donors with the kinds of actions that we've taken. I mean, it is just a mistake. I mean, of course we listen to our donors, just like we listen to all of our stakeholders, but it is really a mistake, a real mistake, to think that the donors are pulling puppet strings here. It's just not true. As far as the threshold goes, look, this is one of these issues where there are people feel very strongly on both sides. There are people who really get a lot of, you know, we talk about mental health, they get a lot of good social value from the interactions they have. And then there are really bad experiences. And I think what we are always trying to do is find that balance, not completely pull the rug out, but try to protect the positive part of the experience. At some point, you're absolutely right, Mariah, at some point you can't go any further. But I don't feel that we're at that point yet. I don't know, VP Lombardi, did you want to add anything to that?
You know, it's a great question, Mariah, and I would love to keep this conversation going for a while. Actually, it's one I've thought a lot about. I think there will always be a place for small residential living on a college campus. I think the question of what are the values and principles and purpose behind that small residential living is one that we should have as a community, and the one that we should really explore and say what's important to us. Because there are a lot of benefits derived from having smaller communities within a large community. But again, the tenets on which they're formed, I think, are critically important to be examined and really, really to think about. So there's no bright line, as the president has said, but I think that we as a community need to make sure that we're creating the spaces that represent the type of community we want Cornell to be here and forever, frankly.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I really want to thank you. These are great questions. I will follow up on the financial aid, and we'll see you in the winter, and I'm sure we'll be in touch before then as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great
Thank you. Thank you very
thanks,
much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye. I want to add my thanks, too. Be well. Take care of yourselves. I appreciate Bye. All you're doing.
Thank you.
Don't travel. Don't travel. Bye-bye.
All righty. Thank you all for asking questions of President Pollack and VP Lombardi. They're really great questions, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to everyone. I know we have lingering questions. We would love to be able to ask them, but their schedules are calling, obviously. Okay. Do we want to have to debrief, or should we just move on with the agenda? How are we feeling?
I have a question, which I'm just wondering if anyone here happens to know the answer, because I forgot to ask. Do you guys know if testing will continue for off-campus people after Thanksgiving?
I'm pretty sure it will. I think I spoke with VP Lombardi about this, and he said that they're still going to offer surveillance testing. I don't know if it's he specifically mentioned for off-campus folks, but I'm sure if it's open to on-campus people, they'll take off-campus folks as well. Good question. Okay. Noah, should we continue with our minutes? And just to clarify for everyone, our minutes are just like a recording basically of past meetings that we've had, just like the comments we've made and like all of our meeting records. So we're gonna go over them and approve them. They're different from resolutions, just to clarify for everyone.
Yes, and also just in regards to everybody's time, the agenda starting next week will be sent out earlier, probably around Tuesday evening. This week we haven't had our first executive board meeting, so a few things that were on the agenda took a few extra days to get onto the agenda. That's why it was sent out this morning instead of on Tuesday. But starting next week, they'll be out on around Tuesday, maybe Wednesday morning. And yeah, definitely, hopefully you can find some time within those 2 days to review the minutes if you would like to. And yeah, and with that, I guess if people want to review it, maybe we can have a motion to table the approval to next week if people feel passionately about going through them. But if not, then if someone wants to make a motion to approve them, that's good.
Excuse me, I have to apologize. If that was a reference to me earlier, I thought that the minutes were the resolutions. So I apologize for that.
Oh, no, you're completely fine. It's good. Okay. I'm sure if you had the question, like everybody else did, right? Like a lot of the new members, there's a lot going on and I understand that. And yeah, I appreciate your patience and definitely ask questions if you don't understand anything. I've been there, we've all been there. So yeah, don't feel bad about that.
Okay, thank you.
Motion to approve minutes.
Second.
Perfect. Okay, and then Kat, do you want to do voting or is that Mike's job?
Yeah, everyone just go ahead and put a yes or a no in the participants chat on approving the minutes. And this is the second batch of minutes. And again, only SA voting members, please. If you're voting no, feel free to put the no signal, or if you're abstaining, you can message me or Noah privately. I'm still waiting for a few votes, I think. Actually, yeah, a few votes. Has everyone voted that wants to vote? If you have not voted, then I'm going to go ahead and assume that's an abstention. So Noah, I think the vote count is 24-0 to 3.
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go. 24-0 to 3. Wonderful. So our minutes are approved. And again, this is just our recordings of our last meetings. And now we can move on to new business. So yes. We have resolution number 6. I'm going to allow the sponsor, Uche, to introduce his resolution, explain what it's about. And again, everyone has a copy of it if you want to look at it in the box.
Hi, thank you, Kat. So yes, my resolution, there are some amendments that I was gonna propose a little bit later, but basically the reasoning for my resolution is around the fact that we use ranked choice voting for student assembly elections for the presidential, executive, vice president, and executive vice president race, and I think undesignated representative at large as well. The issue, you know, as you guys may know, and you can see it in the resolution, you know, ranked choice voting is a method of voting in which voters rank candidates in order of preference. All first choice votes are tallied in a single winner race. If no candidate receives a majority of the first votes, the less popular candidates are eliminated, and ballots cast for these candidates are redistributed to more popular candidates based on their voters' second choices until one candidate wins with the majority. One of the issues that we kind of found, especially within like the 2019 student assembly elections, and as y'all saw, you know, with our most recent elections, is the fact that, you know, back in 2019, 1,435 ballots were deemed empty in the presidential election, 1,761 ballots were deemed empty in the executive vice president election, and 2,038 ballots were deemed empty in the undesignated student assembly representative at large race. In the second round of elections from this fall, 37 votes were invalidated for the presidential election. We don't know how many were invalidated. We don't know the exact number of how many were going to be invalidated for the first round of elections in the fall. But we know that the issue is that many of those votes that were being invalidated were stemming from the fact that voters were not ranking every single candidate. And if you did not rank every single candidate, your vote was invalidated. It didn't show up in the computer system. And further, voters were not notified of the fact that their votes were going to be invalidated if they did not rank every single candidate. Hence the reason why, you know, when we found that, when this was found out, there was a recount just so that we could ensure that as many voters as possible had their votes count. So what I wanted to do was just make a really small change and just make it very clear in the charter that any ballot that has a candidate who is left, candidate or candidates who are left unranked in the ballot, their vote will not be invalidated, and whatever vote they do decide to make will go towards the candidates that they do decide to rank. I think that this is just important because I think we see, like, even outside of like student assembly and other elections where there is ranked choice voting, you know, you have the option of not ranking every single candidate, and you know, your vote still counts. So that should hold true here as well, just because if you don't want to vote for a candidate, I know that there are several students who are saying that they didn't want to vote for a certain candidate for whatever reason. I just think it was kind of problematic that we had this whole issue. So I know that it says changing it to the one that you may be seeing right now says changing it to a plurality voting system, but those are some of the amendments I wanted to make. I don't want to make it a plurality or, like, you know, whoever gets the most amount of votes in the first round wins. I wanted to make it to where keep it ranked choice voting, but you don't have to rank every single candidate in order for your vote to count. Yeah, so I'll you know, if anybody wants to ask any questions right now, that's cool, but I can just take questions if y'all have them.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Uche, for presenting. Okay. I do want to remind everyone that how the essay normally operates within our standing rules and our bylaws is that the first week when the resolution is initially introduced at this first meeting, you're only allowed to like ask questions about it and like request more information about it, basically. And then at the second meeting, that's typically when we start like debate and talking about things and like really debating the merits of the resolution. Okay, I see some questions. I am gonna go ahead and start a speakers list. And also, yes. Okay, I see hands popping up. Okay, I'm gonna, Kayla, I think you had your hand up first, but then it went away and then it came back. Do you want to?
Yeah, I did. I don't know like what, sorry, I'm like so new, so I don't know exactly if the question is like appropriate for now. But my only concern was with, is with the freshman election, since there were, I think, 18 people running this year, would it require that you rank all 18, that you rank three, or should they not be included in the ranking since there's so many? Which is somewhat echoing Andrea's comment. I don't know if that's like a question for now or if next meeting or whatever. So yeah, I know it's never ranked, but would this include freshmen or would it exclude?
As far as I'm concerned, Mariah put this in the chat. freshman reps, this is not, it's not a ranked election.
Okay.
So yeah, this resolution won't apply to.
Okay, cool. I'm just making sure.
Wonderful. Kayla, thank you for checking and asking. Next, we have Layla.
Yes, I just have a question. I don't know if, because you said you're making a few amends. So it's like, so are you proposing that the votes aren't transferred? Because I lost out.
No. So basically, you know, what I'm proposing is the fact that, you know, when you, so for example, for our race, presidential race, right, there are three candidates. The issue was that there were some people who only wanted to rank one candidate and then keep it at that. They didn't want to rank the other two, or they only wanted to rank two candidates and didn't want to rank the others. Problem was, those people who only ranked one or just ranked two but didn't rank all of us, their votes were being invalidated, which is like problematic, right? Because I know some people who didn't want to rank all of them because some people, they, it was basically a vote of no confidence. Like they didn't want to have any votes transferred up to this person. And that was the same thing for the undergraduate elected university assembly representative race. And even, and I think that it should just like transfer to all of the rank, the races that use ranked choice voting. But yeah, I think transferring will still happen if, you know, more than one person is ranked, but yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Layla. Next we have Kate.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if, aside from the resolution, if there's been steps to kind of talk to the people who actually handle the software of the voting system and like making sure that there could be maybe like an alert or like a notice saying you have to select candidates.
So by the time that we figured out, right, that these votes were being invalidated, that is what eventually like prompted the decision to like restart the whole vote count. And then there was, you saw that there was another email that went out to the entire Cornell community that was outlining the fact that, you know, you had to rank every single candidate in order for your vote to count. And the problem, also the other problem was, the, you know, like you were saying, like there was no notification to people who were not ranking every single candidate that their votes were going to be invalidated. It went through, you got an email, you know, if you didn't rank every candidate, you still got the email confirming that your vote was or your ballot was submitted and all that. No one ever knew that their votes were invalidated. So I'm thinking like with this resolution, it would make it very clear that like, you know, if your vote, if you do not decide to rank every single person, your vote will count. But I think that there can still be follow-up information. Well, I think at this point, right, you know, there wouldn't really need to be an alert if this resolution is passed, because like, you know, even if you decide not to rank every single candidate, your vote's going to still count.
I have a follow-up.
Yes, go for it, Kate.
What would happen in the event of a tie?
In the event of a tie.
Because
it's a good question.
If you don't, yeah, because if you aren't able to do the whole, the ranking system, then it could lead to a tie.
Well, no. This is still going to be a ranking system. Like, it wouldn't be like a plurality, like you only choose one person, right? And then like, because I could see how like that would end up being, this is still going to be like a ranking system. Like, you're still going to be able to rank candidates. It's just, you won't need to rank every single person.
Does that help answer your question, Kate?
I would still like to know like what would happen like in the event of a tie.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, go ahead, Tomas.
So I think if we're still doing, right, because he's going to make the amendments to make it still a ranked choice system, just you can have basically a vote of no confidence and choose not to rank someone. The likelihood of there being a tie would be pretty much just as likely as the current situation, which is just very, very, very unlikely that there would be a tie, right? Like technically with the current system, there could theoretically be a tie, right? It's just very, very unlikely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tomas. And just to clarify for folks, next week we will have the updated resolution with all the amendments that Uche just talked about. So you all can have it on paper and everything. Perfect. We have a few more people on the speakers list. I'm just gonna keep going down. Next we have Claire, go ahead.
So I was gonna ask about the presenting the resolutions, because right now as the resolution is presented, it's a bit conflicting about how it calls for a plurality voting system, which is not ranked choice.
That's what I was referring to. Like, this is not, and I'm gonna make these amendments, right? This is not gonna be calling for like a plurality voting system. It's still gonna be ranked choice, which is, you know, yeah, there, that amendment is gonna end up being made for next week when we actually vote on this charter change. But this is still ranked, it would still be ranked choice. It's just, you don't have to rank all of the candidates in order for your vote to count.
Also, I had another question, which is sort of relating to Kate's question. If I'm not mistaken, the issue with submitting ballots that had a position that was unranked just didn't go through the computer system because of the way the computer calculated the election. So how would we update the software to actually count these ballots now that...
Yeah, so I mean, like, I don't think that would be like a, you know, the student assembly would like find it. That would just be more so of like an action that the Office of Assemblies would take to figure out a software that will count all of the votes or update it or change it. But this wouldn't be something that we would be personally finding a system to change it to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Claire,
thank you.
Wonderful. We have three more people on the speakers list. Valentina, you're up next.
Hi, Uche. I'm just a little bit still confused with, like, I think you answered that it's not going to be plurality voting. So is that a language thing, or is that like you're trying to do a combination of both?
Here's what I can do. I made the amendments. I have the other resolution like ready. I can just send it to you guys so you can see it. Since I know y'all probably want to see it on paper to understand better, but I actually have like all of the amendments like made out and ready. I think, Noah, did you upload it into the drive or the box?
I can do that. Yeah, I can do that right now.
Okay, yeah, because I sent it to Noah. I already have it ready.
Yeah, and just to like reiterate Kat's point, these like the updated amended version will be in the agenda next week, not this version.
So so to clarify, right now we're updating the the version with the amendments into the box right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna put them in the box right now, and I'll send the link in the chat.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm gonna allow like a couple minutes for that to happen, and also for people to review the amended resolution once we get that link. And Valentina, is your question mostly just dependent? Do you think after you read the amended resolution, you'll be okay, or?
Yeah, I think I would like to see the language.
For sure. I'm gonna allow Sam to ask his question while we're waiting so we can get an idea of what his question is going to be. And then I'll give everyone a few minutes to look at the resolution as well. Sam, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was gonna ask what you think the benefit is of having the votes that aren't fully ranked not disqualified, because I think that a ranking system, motivates students to know what platforms president candidates and other candidates are running on. And so if students don't have to vote and can just put one, that kind of makes it easier to just vote for a friend versus voting for someone you think deserves the position.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that like we have to, which I think it's good that like, you know, you're concerned about like people actually getting to know like all of the candidates and wanting to like make sure people are being very informed. There are a couple things. I think first thing is that there are some people who are well informed of the candidates, right? And I think that we can also look at, you know, the example from this year, there's some people who are well informed of the candidates, but had a very hard time even having to rank them in the last choice just because they didn't agree with them at all on their platform. Like it was basically a vote of no confidence, right? But there was no option to be able to do that, right? So if we look outside of like, you know, the whole Cornell system, right? When there's ranked choice voting being done in like other elections, you have the opportunity to not rank every single candidate, right? When we're doing ranked choice voting, and that not ranking a candidate is basically a vote of like no confidence. So I think that, you know, for one, like, you know, giving, you know, voters the opportunity, you know, and I think the other part of it is like, right, like if someone was already going to put someone in like their first place or rank them first, like, I don't think that this is going to like make it any more likely that like someone's just gonna, you know, rank someone first and then like kind of keep it pushing. I think that if people, you know, maybe have their top two candidates and they can't decide between the two, or, you know, whatever, there's still that option that like, you know, maybe, I don't know, it could be like toss up by rank one, rank the second, and like keep it at that. But like, I don't think that I just don't personally think that like making it to where you have to rank every single candidate is like fair, especially for the people who maybe for one candidate or maybe for two candidates, you just feel like they do not want them to have like any votes, have any votes transferred up to them or any votes count towards them.
Right. So that would kind of only be relevant in which there were four or more candidates, right? So if there were three and you ranked your first two choices and you didn't rank the third, it would be equivalent to ranking the third candidate as your third choice, right? Since they wouldn't get the vote no matter what. So I guess it would be limited to a certain condition of elections.
So I'm sorry,
So for example, in the past election, if you voted, for example, participant one and participant two as one and two, not voting for the person running, the third person running, would be equivalent to voting them as third. Right, so like not voting didn't really change anything, not ranking.
Can I interject just as a little DOE
Mariah, do you have a point of information you'd like to offer?
I maybe Uche can like answer this question, but I also wanted to just give an answer if Uche doesn't have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
But like I understand that. Yeah, so basically with your hypothetical, you're saying like someone ranks just like two candidates out of three or like four candidates out of five. And you're saying that technically it would just be like, it's basically the same thing, right? But it's not, because what happens with the ranked choice is that your vote moves up and moves up every time that like one of your candidates doesn't make it. So if you put down participants one, two, and three in that order and you rank them in that order, what would happen is candidate one got the lowest votes in the first tab. They're now out, and now candidate two gets your votes. They're now out. In this system, when candidate two gets disqualified or gets like knocked out because they had the lowest votes, your vote now goes to no one. Whereas in the last time, your vote would go to candidate three. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was clear, but like there's a difference between ranking someone last and not ranking them at all.
Awesome.
Because your vote still counts for them even if they're last. If your other first two candidates or first four candidates or however many, even if none of them win, your last ranked person would still get a vote at some point. That's the whole point of like ranked choice voting, is that whoever wins had a vote from everyone at some point on their ballot.
Kat, okay. Can I make a point of information?
Thank you, Mariah. I have a point of information from Dylan, so I'm going to let him to say that, because point of information allows you to skip ahead of the speakers list. Dylan, go ahead. Thank you.
I mean, just onto Mariah's example, again, that doesn't make sense, because if candidates one and two are eliminated, you know, whether your vote transfers to candidate three or not wouldn't matter, because they'd be the only candidate left in the race. But onto the initial question, like where Uche's new system does make sense, is even though there are three in this election, yes, if you wanted to rank two candidates, it wouldn't have made a difference. But what if you only wanted to rank one? In that case, it would make a difference, because you wouldn't want, you know, another voter to get another candidate to your second preference votes. You know, likewise in a it does only work if there are two candidates or more that you don't want to rank, but it's not necessarily to do with there being more than three, because you know, in this election, for example, if you voted for one person, you didn't want your votes to carry on to number two, then, you know, that would have made an influence. So it's not so much about there being four or more candidates, it's more about there being two that you don't want to vote for. That makes sense.
Okay. Thank you for that point of information, Dylan. Okay. So has everyone gotten a chance to look at the amended resolution, first of all? It was sent in the chat, and I would encourage everyone to take a look at it. The formatting is a little bit off, so Uche, if you would like to explain what exactly, like, just go over the amendments again really fast, point out where they are. If you would like to share your screen, or if you would like me to share my screen, let me know, and you're muted.
Oh, could you share your screen?
Yeah, I can share my screen. Also, I see hands in the participants chat. However, not everyone has had a chance to speak. So that means I'm gonna have to start a second speakers list. This means that if you have already spoken, I'm gonna put you on the second speakers list. And if someone else raises their hand and they have not gone yet, I'm gonna prioritize them. But otherwise, I will allow the second speaker list to go. Okay, I am going to share my screen right now. Let's see. And I'm going to, it's going to have a resolution on it. Let's hope this works. Wonderful. Okay. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes? I'm sorry. The way in which this is like formatting from like Microsoft Word and everything. Okay, if you go to the very first, the title is changed as well. It's not a plurality. I'm so sorry. I don't know why it's formatting this way. But anyways, yeah, we'll fix it. Anyway, so it's not a plurality anymore. It's just amending the ranked choice voting system for all Cornell Student Assembly elections. Then the next change, nothing changes on, you know, this page. Next change is just on page 3. If you go all the way down, where the lines that are green are is the wording that is like already in the charter that we have right now. And what's in red is the proposed change, right? So it would be president, executive vice president, and other undesignated at-large representatives will be elected by a single transferable voting system. Voters may rank all candidates on the ballot for each of these races. And any ballot that has candidates who are left unranked on the ballot shall not be invalidated and will count towards the ranked candidate or candidates. And then what you see in green is what's already in the charter. So that's the only change.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Uche. So everyone has gotten to take a look at this amended resolution. I'm gonna go ahead and stop share, but I'm gonna encourage all of you to like keep the link up and like keep looking at it so you know exactly what this resolution is saying. Okay, and again, just a reminder, we will not be voting on this resolution today. It is a charter change, which means that it cannot be voted on the day it is introduced. So we're only gonna be voting on it next Thursday. And then secondly, you know, we have a speaker list going. I see one hand still up. Samuel, is that from your last comment or do you wanna speak again?
Yeah, that was from my last comment, my bad.
Okay, no worries.
Motion to table.
Okay, there is a motion to table. Second. Okay, wonderful. All in favor of tabling. Tabling basically just means that we're going to put it off to next week and we're gonna discuss it again and vote on it again as we're supposed to next week. Okay. So please vote in the participants chat on whether or not we can table. And I see a hand, technically we're not supposed to like allow debate during voting, but Layla, I do wanna recognize your hand. What is your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to, tell Uche, I don't know if you noticed, but it still says plurality and beat therefore resolved. I don't know if you just wanted to change that before next week.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll change that. I'll get that changed. I'll change it. I'll go through it and change.
Thank you so much, Layla. Okay, we're voting SA members only. If you're a voting member, please vote. This is a vote to table, not a vote on the resolution. This means we're going to vote. If you're voting yes, this means you're saying it's okay to vote on it next. We're going to discuss this next Thursday. Is there any dissent? If you dissent, please vote no. This means that you would like to continue discussing it today. Still waiting for a couple more votes. Two more votes. Lucas and Dylan, if you are voting yes, please put yes in the chat. And if you're abstaining, please message me privately or Noah privately. And if you're not voting, I'm going to assume that you're abstaining. Okay, Noah, so this is with a vote of 25, 2-0 to 2, this resolution has been tabled. Uche, thank you for introducing it. Everyone, thank you so much for your questions. Wonderful. We no longer have anything on the agenda. I think we have a few quick announcements or just like things to debrief really quickly. First of all, committee chair applications will be opening soon so we can start staffing our committees. Please, if you have any questions, feel free to ask Layla. Do we have any other announcements that we want to include really fast? Yes.
Yeah, two announcements. And one of them is that if you guys missed the orientation, Kat, in the Drive folder she shared with all of us, uploaded a recording of the orientation that we did. So definitely watch that. Reach out with any questions you may have. And then secondly, we have an opening for a vice president position. The vice president of research and accountability has opened up again. So if anybody's interested in that role, we will be holding internal elections either next week or the following week. So if that's on your radar, definitely look into it. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions about that. And yeah, we'll be voting on that in the future. So yeah, and with that, oh, Mariah, when are committee chair applications opening up? Layla?
Yeah, I hope to have them open by tomorrow. We're just working on putting them on the newsletter to send out to students. They'll probably be due by next Friday.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Layla. Thank you for asking, Mariah. Alrighty. Any other questions or announcements? Okay. Seeing no questions or announcements, as chair, I would look favorably upon a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, just say aye. Yeah. People have to click
aye.
Amazing. Okay. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here. Bye, y'all.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.